He's the columnist for the Register Guard. Seems like this past week he's covered everything from Dad Rock to the new lacrosse coach at Oregon. Find his work on the front page of the sports section. You could also try registerguard.com. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at AustinMeekRG. Austin, happy Tuesday to you. How you doing?
Hey, Steve, I'm good. It's always a good day when you can get European soccer and Hawaii football in the same opening, isn't it?
Yeah, I would imagine not a lot of overlap there, but we aim to please. So it was funny. I was reading on Father's Day, and for somebody my age, my dad grew up listening to, like, Big Band and Sinatra. I'm actually the dad who has, Zeppelin and Nirvana with their kids, but I thought it was really funny. You had a moment, one of your favorite bands, Wilco, who ironically started the year Kurt Cobain died, had their most recent release reviewed. And what did you discover that was so horrifying about it?
Well, I found this personally offensive that some 22-year-old kid in Brooklyn was describing my favorite band as dad rock. I can deal with the dad jokes and the dad bod and the dad jeans. I'll cop to that, but I refuse to allow my music to be called uncool by some member of the millennial generation.
Not only that, but if you do the math, he was born the year they were. You'd think he'd have a little bit of an appreciation for somebody his own age.
Well, and my kid is only 18 months old. He's definitely not old enough to buy that for me as a Father's Day gift. So I just want everybody to know that.
So let's move on. We had her on the show yesterday. You were at the introductory press conference for the new lacrosse coach, Katrina Dowd. I had Jen Beck on the show many times over the years. I just love the game. I think actually you could see it as an alternative to football for young boys. But you believe her first job, most important job, right off the bat, not necessarily about wins or losses, but getting people to care or be aware.
Yeah, well, you are the perfect person to respond to that column, because you might be the first hardcore lacrosse person that I've talked to in Eugene. And I guess that makes sense. You're from the East Coast.
Yep.
Lacrosse is a big deal there. So it's good to know that there are some lacrosse fans in Eugene, but I'm sure that Oregon would like to cultivate a few more of those. until they hired the new coach, the biggest publicity that program had was when they ended up on Deadspin. It's a video of the girl hitting the opposing team in the head with her stick. Did you see that?
Actually, I hadn't even heard about it. Then you brought it up. What were the details there, and what was the reaction within the Oregon Athletic Department?
Well, it's kind of a weird story, because I saw it at the time. It was several months ago, and I thought at the time, this is sort of a weird thing to have on Deadspin. It was just game footage of these clips of the girl from Oregon going after this girl on the other team. They were playing Detroit Mercy, and just some clips that were spliced together of this girl from Oregon whacking the other girl in the head. And I guess the coach had leaked that on the internet, maybe with the idea that people would see it and there would be this big firestorm about it. I guess I don't think it really created much of a ripple, but I did ask about it yesterday to see, and just from Oregon's perspective, was that a big deal and what they had to do? And they said they addressed it and said that it wasn't a factor in the coaching change. But I assume that's not really the kind of publicity you want out there for a program that people otherwise aren't really going to be talking much about.
We're talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. And while we never got an exact reason why Coach Beck left, you know, she did a great job creating the program. So be it what athletic director Rob Mullins said or logic, how much do you think the fact that we're closing in on, you know, the start of the first ever Pac-12 lacrosse conference maybe played in a change at the top?
Yeah, I asked Rob about that. He said that wasn't necessarily a driving factor in making the change, but I would imagine going into a new conference, that's part of it. Is, you know, it's a good time to maybe have a fresh voice or a new direction, and you know, hopefully. hopefully to elevate the level of play so that Oregon can contend in the Pac-12. It's the conference they've been in, which I still can't remember the name of it, the Mountain.
Yeah, it's the MPFS. It's the Mountain Sports Pacific. Yeah, it doesn't quite resonate like Pac-12.
Yeah, it doesn't quite roll off the tongue, does it? And I think they won one regular season title in that league. In the first 12 years of the program. So obviously they'd like to do more than that in the Pac-12, and I think they felt like in order to get there they had to make a change.
And last Wednesday you wrote about Oregon baseball. Obviously high expectations this year. Some players using the O word, Omaha, and even though George Horton insinuated some type of muzzling, I mean, still, it's kind of ridiculous to think that to believe in yourself, your team, and say it out loud in February really impacts the season. Or do you think maybe a little less chatty next year?
Look, I'm one of those people who believe that the things that athletes and coaches say in public have zero relation to what happens on the field. Now, there's some coaches and some athletes who are so careful about what they say. Like they feel like if they say one wrong word, then somehow there's going to be some karmic retribution where they lose the game because they popped off and they made some bold statement. I don't buy into that at all. But in the case of Oregon baseball, I will say, maybe for their own psychological well-being, if nothing else, maybe it would be good to lay off on the Omaha talk for a while, because it's been so present for them that it's almost sort of become a running joke now. You know, how many times are we going to hear about Omaha in preseason? I think it would probably be good for them just to distance themselves from that a little bit, because you know, they're not going to go into next year with expectations of Omaha from the outside. People aren't going to be talking about them as a team that's a favorite to go to the College World Series. And maybe it would be better for them just to stay under the radar a little bit next year and maybe try to surprise some people in a good way as opposed to what's happened the last couple of years.
Now, the Eugene M season started Friday night here. You wrote about the situation at PK Park, and I was actually kind of amazed at what you wrote about the finances. So not only are the Ducks not getting any rent for another 14 years, but you're telling us that the baseball program is now losing more dough than the wrestling program was, which was kind of a primary motive for the switch at the time.
Yeah, so the genesis of that column was I looked back at some of the stories that were written when Oregon launched the baseball program, and part of the rationale was Oregon felt like that baseball eventually could be financially self-sustaining. And obviously that hasn't happened. They lost $1.7 million on baseball last year, in addition to the debt payment on the stadium, which I guess is like $780,000. So baseball has not been a moneymaker for Oregon, even though there's obviously benefits to it beyond just the bottom line. It hasn't yet turned a profit or really come close for Oregon. And so then when I looked into that a little more, I thought, well, how much money are they getting back from the M's for renting out PK Park for the summer? And was a little surprised to find the answer was nothing. The M's paid $2 million up front, which is, you know, that's a significant amount of money that they paid up front for the right to use the stadium for 20 years. Just kind of an unusual agreement. You know, 20 years is a long time. You don't see many 20-year contracts in sports.
I agree.
And, you know, from Oregon's perspective, I'm sure it was nice to have the money up front to help get the stadium built, but now you're looking at another 14 years until you get another rent payment from the M's. So in some ways, I think it's, you know, it's kind of remarkable that that relationship has worked as well as it has, because you could see that becoming a source of tension for maybe both sides.
I'm thinking I should make a note, call Bank of America, see if I can get that for my mortgage. Where, you know what? I'll come up with a couple grand, and then we'll catch up again in 14 years.
Yeah, well, or if you rent an apartment and you could lock in your rent for the next 20 years, if you like where you live and your rent's not going to go up for 20 years, that'd be a pretty good deal. I'd take that.
We're talking with Austin Meeker, the Register Guard. Another interesting aspect I would never have considered was the Oregon fan base, or who might or might not be crazy about Duck baseball. what have you observed, or the quote from George Horton I thought was interesting, the difference between minor league baseball fans and diehard college baseball fans here?
Yeah, that stuck out to me too, the comments from George Horton. You know, Eugene is, I think it's probably kind of a minor league baseball town, more so than a college baseball town, because of the long relationship with the M's. You know, all those years that Oregon didn't have baseball, they still had the M's, and that cultivated, I think, kind of a minor league fan base in Eugene. And the challenge for Oregon baseball has been to convert that minor league fan base into a rabid college baseball fan base, because it is sort of a different thing. George made this comparison, and I think it's true. You go to a game in Corvallis, it's a totally different atmosphere than going to a game at PK Park. The fans in Corvallis, they are into the game. They'll let the other team hear it. It's not a nice atmosphere to go visit if you're an opposing team. And I think that's the kind of atmosphere that Oregon wants at PK Park, but you know, it's very different than the atmosphere you have for an M's game, where you know, people are just sort of there for the atmosphere, and they're going to sit back, and they're not necessarily totally wrapped up in the outcome of the game. They just want to have a good time and enjoy the promotions and have a hot dog and a beer or whatever. So developing that rabid college baseball fan base in a town that is, you know, for a long time was just existing on minor league baseball, I think, has been a challenge for Oregon.
No, it was an interesting observation, and something that 26 years, you know, the last 8 years with Oregon baseball never even crossed my mind. I want to wrap with the NBA Finals. I found myself on the Cleveland bandwagon. I just thought the way the Warriors handled things, they went a little nuts, a little mouthy, but I thought LeBron James, those final three games, really responding to his critics. So, safe to say, this is the kind of performance that stands the test of time, and years from now, you could be talking about, man, you should have seen LeBron just go get it those last three games in 2016.
Yeah, I think this will go down as one of the most significant NBA finals in history, maybe not one of the best, because until game seven, the games really weren't that close. But you just had so much at stake. You know, you had the Warriors, 73 wins in the regular season, trying to validate themselves as the best team of all time. You had the Cavs trying to be the first team to come back from a 3-1 deficit in the finals. And then you had LeBron trying to win a title for Cleveland. So all those storylines up in the air, and a tie game in game seven for what seemed like about 5 minutes at the end. Just so much riding on this series. I think there were two perceptions that died in this series. Number one was the perception that LeBron is somehow not clutch. I hope we never hear that again. I think he dispelled that pretty emphatically. And then the other one is the perception of the Warriors as this cute, cuddly team that everybody loves. I mean, I was like you. I was pulling for Cleveland at the end, and I'd been a guy, you know, I was kind of a casual Warriors fan during the regular season because I liked how they play. But I'm with you. Some of the things they did in that series, whether it was Steph Curry throwing his mouth guard, or Steve Kerr ripping on the officials, or Draymond Green going after guys below the belt, that stuff just kind of turned me off on the Warriors during that season. I think people will look at them differently because of that series.
Oh, no question about it. They were a warm, fuzzy story. Then things went a little off the rails. And I don't know, would it be accurate to say that when you see the true character, you know, when you're winning and setting records and all anybody's doing is heaping praise on you, it's easy to sign autographs and smile. But, man, it seemed when the adversity got turned up, some bad character traits came through.
Yeah, if there's one word I could use, I thought the Warriors seemed entitled in that series. Yeah, I felt like they thought, you know, Steph Curry's the MVP. He shouldn't have fouls called on him, you know. We won 73 games. Draymond Green shouldn't get suspended for this. Like, somehow they were entitled to win the NBA championship because of what they did in the regular season. And yeah, I think it's totally true. When they had to deal with adversity in this series, it didn't respond very well. I think it brought out some true colors that that weren't very flattering for Golden State.
All right, there you go. I like the entitled insertion there. You can follow this guy at Austin Meek RG. Obviously, you can find his work in the Register Guard. Always appreciate you getting us started on a Tuesday, Austin. Great stuff as always. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
All right, take it easy.